So I like the fact that Kizzy Chaos just talked about tasting a rainbow.
She did. Taste the rainbow.
She did it. That it was. Look, my stance on it is, there's no individual Skittles flavor. You just stuff them all in your mouth, and as she put it, taste the rainbow.
Yeah,
that's what happened. I'm Mr. Agitator, lead singer-songwriter for V is for Villains.
I'm Fallon Flynn. I play guitar and I do backup vocals.
Kizzy Chaos, synth and vocals.
Yeah, you are. I'm so excited. We have 100% more chaos in this podcast.
It's true.
Yeah. That's a very good Wicked Witch.
Halloween witch laugh.
I'll get you!
I always, I like to sometimes imagine myself as a little fairy, like, floating beside you, and when you do your little cackle, then I do a mini cackle.
It's funny you said that, because I imagine
series.
The same thing.
Yeah,
exactly. The coming in 2027. V is for Villains Saturday morning cartoon.
This is kind of exciting, because this is the first time we've been together as a group for a moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So, this episode, we're talking about Halloween 2018 and partially 1978 Halloween, right?
Yeah, because I don't think you can talk about the new one without discussing and kind of comparing some similarities or some throwbacks and callbacks and stuff.
To the original. Yeah, you have to.
So do we need to kind of clarify for anybody listening? Should we assume this is a very spoiler-heavy
podcast? You know, we're just going to get into the shit and start talking about it. Fallon Flynn saw it last night. Kizzy and I, we just went to see it. So we caught the, 4:20 showing?
It was 5:20.
Oh, I just wanted to sneak 4:20 in there. But I thought that, you know, it would be cool. I'm an idiot.
I'm just sitting here thinking, that's my address.
Oh my God.
Don't tell people your address.
I'm not telling them that the street is Haddonfield.
Oh my God. I love it. So, yeah, we went to see Halloween 2018, so we're all caught up, and I thought it would be fun to just get into it, and we'll just go on it while it's fresh in all of our minds.
That's true.
So, Halloween 2018. Thoughts?
No, I can't wait, because I see a look on your face. I see a look on your face that I've known for many years,
So
I'm curious to see what you got.
All right, well, let's start with you, Fallon Flynn. You saw it last night. You saw it first, so...
Did you see it alone?
Yeah, I did, because I thought that we weren't going to be able to catch it together today, but it's all right. It is what it is. I don't know. You said that with a slight sadness in your voice, as if you felt bad for me.
I did.
I'm not one of those people that thinks it's weird to go to the movies by myself. I'm just watching the fucking movie. And she's like, no, I just...
I didn't say that. You're weird for thinking it.
I pitied you, fool.
I bet he enjoyed that.
That's true. Look, it was the most quiet I've had in 4 years.
True.
It's fine. We're recording this on my son's fourth birthday, on Luca's fourth birthday. So it's kind of funny to me. This will be like a milestone years later that I can tell my son that I recorded this podcast on his birthday. And I'm going to stick
it. Is it in the future as a teenage Luke? And he's like, whatever, Dad.
Yeah.
You aren't there for me on my fourth birthday.
No, he's sleeping right now. But I will tell you this. I'm going to leave a time capsule in this episode for my son. You were so cute for most of the day, but there was this 3-hour window where you were just a little shithead. I'm going to tell you that story later. I love you, son.
He was walking around in the Michael Myers mask.
He might as well have been, because he was trying to murder his mother.
He's the shape. That's the twist.
Yeah, I could tell you the shape he had. A little butt head. That was the shape he had today. So anyways.
So yeah. So give us like your brief non-spoiler review.
they made some weird choices. There were some strange things they chose to do. There were some things that made sense to me. Without basically burying the lead on everything that we're going to talk about in the podcast, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The things I liked about it, I liked a lot.
How much did you think you would enjoy it?
Based on the history of this movie's, like, this franchise's history of sequelizing things, I wasn't expecting much. My bar was low.
Fair enough.
Going in. I was optimistic about the trailers. I thought it looked kind of entertaining at the outset and felt more like Michael Myers. So my bar was low. I thought it was going to be okay. It was better than I thought it would be.
Okay.
They just made some really strange choices in
spots.
Like what? What strange choices?
Yeah, what did you think was strange about it?
I kind of felt like, well, there's a kind of a course to this, and I think we need to kind of go through, kind of talk about the movie if we're going to spoil it a bit.
Saying is, if, like, let's say we were on the phone and I hadn't seen the film yet, like, what did you think was strange about
it? I think they made a couple of strange character choices or development.
Like what?
They spent time working on, you know, like a kind of boyfriend character that was ultimately kind of a waste of time.
Oh, okay.
Stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a like high school buddy character.
Okay.
The scene was funny, but it was ultimately kind of a waste of time. There were things that they did, two kind of journalist characters that opened the movie.
Okay.
Interesting scene, kind of developmentally a waste of time.
You think so?
Well,
yes.
Well, they're the ones that showed him the mask, and that sort of like stirred everything.
Sure, sure. And that happened.
Right,
but,
right, right.
But let me tell you something. I liked, you know, Laurie's granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
She's ultimately kind of... She didn't really do anything. I don't know.
You don't think
so? No, she was interesting, but...
Well, what was she supposed to do?
Let me put it to you like this. The time they spent working on her and all her buddies and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I was more interested in the relationship between Laurie and her daughter, and I feel like they could have spent more time developing that as opposed to developing
some
things.
And yet, I watched her daughter, and I just... hated her.
Well, yeah, but I think that's the point, is she's an obnoxious asshole.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't realize this, but she's, you know, what's her name? I can never remember her. Judy Greer.
Yeah, Judy.
Judy Greer. She's the voice of Cheryl Tunt in Archer, if anybody listening, just little factoid, because I like that character. She's funny. But I can never not hear Cheryl's voice whenever I see Judy Greer. But I think that's the point. You're supposed to kind of hate her because she's a grating, kind of obnoxious, like, you know. But I don't know. I have a lot of thoughts about it. But I mean, it's going to be completely out of sequence if we don't.
No, it's fine. No, I kind of like what we're doing here. I kind of like just getting a general.
I liked. Here's what I liked.
Because I feel like we usually we waste a lot of time on just a lot of exposition, and I just want to cut through that.
We
like
do.
But no, continue, because I'm going to assume that a lot of our listeners have either seen it or they're very familiar with
it.
So I think you're okay to go, and we will go a little more into detail, but keep going on.
Some things
on
that
thoughts.
I think they were successful with. It spiritually, it feels like a direct sequel. So anybody that may not know, they are taking the Halloween movies and throwing everything out except for the first one. In this,
yes,
where this is a direct sequel,
and how many sequels are there to the Halloween franchise?
I don't know, Marilyn, like 15. I don't know. There are a lot.
And then there's the Rob Zombie spinoffs too,
right? And that's its own universe.
Yeah,
which
that's
is strange.
Its own thing.
So this is a third timeline. I'm very thankful that they went that way.
Well, this is something I think you're going to see a lot of like tired franchises start doing, is going back to where the series started to lose its luster, and then just try to pick up where that left off. They tried to do that.
You know, where the series lost its luster in 1979, like right after the first film.
You look me in my fucking eye and tell me that every Halloween movie after that has not been subsequently worse than the last one, with the strange exception of Halloween 2, which just was a movie that they called Halloween for nothing.
See, I feel
I
like,
enjoyed it.
Yeah, I feel like there were ups and downs in the series. And I feel like there were some that were far worse than others.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some that I actually liked, you know. Most of them were bad.
Well, they tried doing it with Alien 2, where they were going to have Neil Blomkamp come in and write and direct a sequel that was a direct sequel to Aliens, and that got well underway. And then Ridley Scott was like, "No, I'm doing Alien, whatever the fuck, Alien Covenant."
Your idea of Ridley Scott is he's like some weird.
Have you ever watched interviews with him? The dude is dry and morose, and he seems kind of bitter. And he was just like, "No, we're doing Alien Covenant." So Neil Blomkamp, that can't do that. And then they just fucking threw the whole thing out.
I think that was a mistake.
It was a mistake because Alien Covenant sucked.
I didn't see it.
Yeah. That's a whole other thing
I wanted
at another point. But
back to Halloween.
I think there's going to be a thing where they start going to where the sequels came. It kind of came apart and then trying to refresh them for what probably should have happened. I thought this movie was successful at being a spiritual successor. It felt and kind of looked in a lot of spots like Halloween.
Yeah, it did.
You know, I mean, even Laurie's granddaughter and her friends, there was a very familiar vibe to the way it was shot and lit, mm-hmm. and a lot of daytime things that happened. Yeah. And
very reminiscent of when we were first introduced to Jamie Lee Curtis in the original.
Yes.
With her friends.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I mean, there were a lot of like, people could even maybe complain that it was so similar. There was the same things that people complain about with like Episode 7 of Star Wars. Like, it's too similar. They did some shot for shot shit. But I didn't find, I didn't feel that way.
I didn't think so.
The scene with her blonde friend and the little kid that she's babysitting, the younger black kid that she was babysitting, that kid was hilarious. Yeah. And he was great.
They were great.
But that whole scene, there were so many angles that were used that were so similar to the first movie that it does kind of incite a feeling of nostalgia. Yeah. I thought they were very successful at making this feel like a spiritual successor to the original Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought that was great.
True sequel.
There were some weird beats in there, like, you know, the new Dr. Loomis was kind of a strange thing.
Is the other Loomis dead?
Well, he died. He just died of old age.
No, he's actually dead.
Yeah, he died. Over time, you know.
So the actor who played him, his name was Donald Pleasance. He played Loomis, and he was also in the James Bond films as Blofeld.
Mm-hmm.
He played Blofeld, I think, the longest. Mm-hmm. Or no, maybe the shortest. I don't know. He's one of the Blofelds. Anyway.
I enjoyed him as Loomis.
Yes.
I missed him. I found myself missing him a lot.
Well, Donald Pleasance in as Blofeld is the archetype for Dr. Evil from Austin Powers, which stars Mike Myers.
Ooh.
So Michael Myers is the killer in this. And
the universes are aligned.
Let me get you a tinfoil hat.
So Donald Pleasance inspired Mike Myers. No, I'm sorry. We're done. Anyway, So there were some weird beats. I agree with you.
Yeah. They made some strange character choices. And I'll tell you this. I didn't know this until I was watching the credits and saw that it was not only produced, but co-written by Danny McBride.
Yeah, I knew that, actually.
I was like, oh my God, man. You know? But he's a talented guy.
Doesn't shock me.
No.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So, overall, in your quick synopsis, your quick review, one being the lowest, four being the highest, 1 out of 4 Freddy knives.
1 out of 4. Wasn't it like Mr. Agitator hats or some shit?
Yeah. That's what it was last time, yeah.
I don't know. You gotta work. We gotta find a fixed
rating
system.
1 out of 4 finger knives.
1 out of 4 finger knives.
1 out of 4 Fallon Flynn hoods.
Fallon Flynn.
That's
true. I would say like a 3.5.
3.5.
Yeah, like I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I didn't think it was bad. It wasn't mind blowing, but you also have to kind of know when you're watching.
I mean, I think if out of a 1 out of 4, if you're saying 3.5, that's pretty fucking good.
No, I think it's pretty good. It's not like the best, but it's...
You're like, it's not mind-blowing, but it's great.
I was entertained. I enjoyed myself throughout. I settled into it and was very comfortable in that world and felt good about what I was watching. And I had a good time with it. Great. It was fun. I didn't overthink it. I know a lot of people are being very critical because it's Halloween.
Are they
but
really?
Let's be... Yeah, man. A lot of people are... Let's go...
it's Halloween, I think they'd be a little less critical.
Well, that's how I felt. But, I mean, there are people who take that franchise very seriously.
You can't...
I think critical in the way of everyone goes, am I going to see this?
Yeah, but, right. But I mean, like, let's be honest. If you revisit Halloween, it is certainly not high fucking art. You know,
no.
The original. Yeah. I mean, it pioneered a lot of things.
The original, I think, I do think it's kind of...
Nick thinks it's high fucking art.
I do. I mean, look.
He's like, well, hold on now.
It's a little formulaic after the first one.
Right. You know? Yes. Agreed. But the thing that makes Halloween 78 a cinematic masterpiece...
Lighting, audio, and camera work. Those three things in particular...
Sure. You are getting so good at throwing your voice.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, I agree with those three things. I do. But what, in my opinion, what makes Halloween 78 a masterpiece, and that we're still making sequels 40 years later, that we still give a shit about revisiting it, it created the archetype for the formula.
Yeah, for the slasher and
the
formula.
So, the first slasher film is Peeping Tom. Right, followed by the popularization of it by Psycho. So Psycho, in essence, is the first mainstream slasher, and it's a great film. It still holds up to this day. Right after that, and I love the connection between Psycho and Halloween, which is Janet Leigh is the famous shower scene stabbed victim, and that is Jamie Lee Curtis's mother, which I love. She sort of passed the torch, the final girl torch, down to her daughter, which I think is wonderful. So when you think about it, Laurie Strode, the character played by Jamie Lee Curtis in both films, as a young woman and as an older woman, she created the final girl. This is the first final girl. So, you know, to me, yes, it's formulaic now, right? And the story of Halloween has been retold so many times in a trillion good and bad films that it feels to formula, but it invented that formula. Mm-hmm. So to me, I think it is an artistic film. And I think there is a lot of merit to it in that way.
You can just say, I think you're wrong.
Well, I don't know.
And it's okay. I mean, I stand by my statement because I agree with that for the first one.
Right. For the first film.
For the first one.
Not around the time Buster Rhymes was doing.
But it's
I do love me some Tyra Banks, though. So.
It's got the same thing that happens generationally with horror movies. Like, look at, there's a certain generation of people that talk about the universal, you know, monsters. Right. Like, oh my God, those things, the Wolfman used to scare the shit out of me when I was a kid. And you look at it now and you're like, wouldn't scare my 4-year-old son.
No, of course not.
No, it would scare my 4-year-old son.
Yes.
But the same thing is kind of like it is now with, you know, Halloween seems very tame compared to, you know, the modern age.
But
at the time it was,
If you go back on YouTube and you watch the Siskel and Ebert review of Halloween from 78, it is hilarious. Because they're like, God, we had a hard time walking home. Like, we were so scared. And it's like, it doesn't seem that scary now.
Yeah.
But that's because the action beats in the film and the script, it's been retold so many times that you see it coming a mile away. But at the time, that was terrifying shit.
Yeah. There was actually a moment watching this new one before he got his mask back.
Yeah.
I thought that they were going to go sort of a new direction and make it, I don't know, a little bit of commentary on society that the scariest thing is the person without the mask that's actually coming to break into your home.
Right.
But it's
could
not
be
true.
Anyone. It doesn't have to be Michael Myers.
It's always the man in the mask that is the most frightening.
No, I mean, I agree with that. And I think that was something that I loved in this film. But you tell me now, Kizzy, your review of Halloween 2018. How did you feel about it? What did you like?
I enjoyed it. I would also give it, I'd give it 3.5 fairy wings.
3.5 fairy wings. Very good.
Nothing makes sense anymore. We're just pulling shit out of our asses.
Yeah. 3.5 fairy wings. So you did like it. Was there anything that you disliked?
I had a little bit of a problem with the whole, the granddaughter is, you know, she's out in the middle of nowhere. She's in this cop car, spoilers. And,
It's fine.
For one reason or other, she exits the car and she goes off running into the woods.
For
into
seemingly
some random
15
woods.
Minutes. And she's running like she's being chased.
Yeah. And she ends up, you know, over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house.
Yeah.
Just by coincidence.
Yes.
And then did she not know that she lived there? Because then she ran into all her mannequins, spoilers, so mannequins out in the yard. And she didn't know what they were. So has she been to grandma's house? But then when she walked in, she's like, Grandma, Mom, where you at?
Yeah, you're right. That was very not tight.
I had a little trouble buying the
Actress that played her, and I felt like she did pretty good. But what bothered me is they could have given her more to do.
Yeah.
When I say that there were things missing in character development, I didn't give a fuck about her weird douchey boyfriend or her douchey friend. I would have liked to see her do something more interesting. Because they established a good relationship between, an interesting relationship between she and Laurie at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then they
didn't. Right. Where
they missed something there.
Laurie Strode at this point in the beginning of the film is sort of a shut-in. She's agoraphobic. She's scared of places and
PTSD,
people, very PTSD ridden, and you can see that Laurie Strode and Laurie Strode's daughter have a very fractured relationship. A lot of that due to the way that Laurie Strode tried to raise her. She tried to raise her to be the ultimate final girl.
Yeah,
she was like, "I am going to final girl the fuck out of my daughter."
She tried to prepare her
for the worst. And then now this was a beautiful point in the script, something that I thought was genius, is you cannot impose a fear of the traumatic if you haven't suffered it. It means nothing to someone who did not live through it. You know, to someone who lived through it, it's everything and it defines the rest of your life. But to someone who doesn't know, to the uninitiated, as you would say, it's nothing. So it fractured their relationship, you know, and the granddaughter, they seem to have this kind of secret relationship behind her mother's back, where clearly Lori is a bit more involved than she lets her daughter know.
Trying to make up for lost time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I get that feeling. And also mm-hmm. trying to train the third generation, the mm-hmm. final girl.
But seems more concerned with making sure that her granddaughter has a life that her mother didn't, that she didn't give to her daughter. Like,
yeah.
She tried to give her some money and she's like, take a vacation, go somewhere, do something. You know, which doesn't sound like, based on the relationship she had with her daughter, that's not the kind of thing she would have said to her daughter. It would have been like, you yeah. don't have time for a fucking vacation. You have to be ready.
Right. Mm-hmm. So she kind of became Sarah Connor.
She did. I got to tell you, though, I like what they did with Lori. It made
yeah.
perfect sense where her character landed after the trauma that she suffered and mm-hmm. a lifetime of having to sit and think about it. I like that they kind of tried to juxtapose, you know, Hunter and Prey, and they have a symbiotic relationship, she and Michael, where like they almost stay alive in preparation right. for this moment.
Right.
It's there is a buildup that you feel like it's leading to a confrontation, which it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple other things that stuck out to me in the movie, which, you know, they erase the timeline, so it sort of erases it too. But for example, when they're in the cop car and mm-hmm. granddaughter's in the back, passed out, Michael Myers is in the back. New Loomis is up front.
New Loomis.
Michael wakes up and chooses to kill Loomis from the other side of the gate instead of the chick
girl
right next to him.
Right next to him.
And yeah. specifically the bloodline, you know, that he's supposedly connected to, except they erased that because we find that out in the second movie, I believe, of the original series. And they erased that and they didn't touch on
right.
why is Michael Myers coming after Lori.
Yeah, they
right.
retconned
so
that.
There is no blood connection
nope.
anymore.
Right.
And that's, I think that's
even,
kind of interesting.
But even that aside, I mean, why wouldn't he kill the girl that's just, you know,
sitting
next
to him?
So
I
easy.
Feel like logically
it's Michael Myers.
I mean, look, he's not shy. Earlier in the movie, he snaps the neck of, like, what, a 12-year-old
yeah.
boy or
yeah.
something?
Every
yeah,
single
yeah,
person who passes.
I was
yeah.
waiting.
Yeah.
There was a scene where I was waiting for him to stick a knife in a baby. I thought it was coming. And
see, I never thought he was going to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't see that happening.
Well, but they implied that maybe he was going to with some, you know, kind
and
of angles and stuff.
Maybe?
No,
yeah,
no.
I feel like
he looked in.
You.
I think he thought about it. And
I think they tried to rev that tension up to play on the audience's fear of it happening. To
well, because not,
suspense.
Not 10 minutes before, he
yeah.
just snapped the neck of a 12-year-old boy.
Yes, but I still feel like, no. See, here's what I think. And this is why I never once feared that he would kill the baby. And I never think that he would, because I feel like Michael Myers equates murder and the trauma to his age. So a 12-year-old boy is fair game because he was, what, 7 when he started killing? 6?
Yeah.
I don't think he would kill anyone younger than 6.
Interesting.
That's just my theory. And I never thought that he would, which is why I didn't fear for the child, like the baby at all. But that's just me.
I liked that they made the relationship between Michael and Lori, they retconned it so that they're not family, because one of the things that makes him so fascinating is the intensity of him building up to killing somebody, where he just kind of stares at him for a while. He's always kind of lurks and stares.
Yeah.
And think about the obsession of not getting that one person and then fuming over it
for 40 years.
just obsessing over,
like,
I'm gonna get out of here. I don't know when, I don't know how, but I'm gonna get the fuck out of here. And when I do, I'm gonna finish what I started. Like, that's
yeah.
the ultimate Michael Myers. Like, I've had time to think about this, and I think
yeah.
I'm gonna do it.
So I think there were some incredible callbacks mm-hmm. to the original film. There mm-hmm. were some incredible things that, you know, you'd probably have to be pretty quick to catch, but if you did, it was just like, yes. There was the fact that his left eye is still fucked up.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, that was cool.
I love that. And I loved seeing him without the mask on. They actually showed mm-hmm. a bit of him without the mask
on. It was very uncomfortable.
Which
he had
I loved.
A very trimmed beard.
Yeah. He was very... Michael Myers, he
well
takes
kept,
care of
yeah.
himself. You know? No, and I like that. What I liked about it was this. One of my favorite things about the original Halloween was that when the mask comes off, he's a handsome, normal mm-hmm. guy underneath. He's not fucking weird. He's not, he doesn't have a burned face or a scarred anything, or he's just a guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? And to me, that was very powerful. The two things that I absolutely love about Halloween 78 and why I still think it's an incredible film and a masterpiece is, number one, there's really not a whole lot of killing. And when it happens, it's quick. Mm-hmm. It's quick and then it's done.
Mm-hmm.
That film is steeped and just mired in intensity.
Yeah.
Like a building swell leading up to the moment.
Which is why I feel like this one spiritually succeeds, yeah. Because they do that again.
Well, the thing is that the encounter in the original film lasts as long as an encounter really would.
Mm-hmm.
15 minutes. You know, either you get stabbed or you don't. You know? It's not like this thing where in other films, horror films, it's like this cat and mouse game that lasts for 3 fucking hours. You know, well, now I gotta hide in the trash can, and now I gotta... No, he sees you, he comes after you, he tries to stab you, and you either get stabbed or you don't.
Generally speaking, I felt like it, with Michael, even in the original movie, and even in this one, if he's in the room with you, it's you're generally not getting out. I mean, think about the bathroom scene with the journalists.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, you know, like, she's moving from stall to stall. And you get the it's sense that he's very calm. Yeah, he just steps over. He's not moving quickly. There's no effort.
Yeah.
You know, until he bashes that guy's head in on the door.
Right. Right.
Which was rough.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up.
He drops a handful of teeth.
In this movie.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah. I fucking laughed at that, actually. And I think some people in the theater probably thought I was psychotic.
Which part?
I thought it was funny. Because he goes up to the stall. Okay, so in the beginning of the film, we meet two journalists. They kind of re-spark him a little bit. We see him standing as a prisoner in a big open area with a bunch of other prisoners in a scene that is actually kind of funny because they bring the mask up to him and they show him. They're true crime journalists that want to complete this story of Laurie Strode, right? They want to tell the ultimate depiction of we got the shape, Michael Myers, to speak, to say something.
But apparently everybody kind of wanted him
everybody
to say
really
something.
Wants him to say something. Well, and I love that. You know, I love that because it's absolutely human, and it's what people would do.
Yeah.
When you think about most serial killers, they love basking in the limelight. They love reliving their crimes. They love playing it up even. You know, BTK killer, who's a scuzzy piece of shit, would all the time... Yeah, I torture this and I love that and blah, 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 blah. After he got caught, of course. But, you know, they love doing shit like that. So in a world where you would have the babysitter massacre, which is what they call it in this world, in a world where Laurie Strode, the survivor of the babysitter massacre, also Michael Myers survives, right? In that world where he's detained, if he says nothing for 40 years, people would be obsessed with wanting to hear what went through this guy's head. Why did you do it? Was it a statement? Or are you just that way? What was going on? What was going on? You know?
Well, that's why everybody was obsessed with studying him. Because if you...
Right.
That's a recurring theme in this movie is that Loomis kind of kicked off the states was studying him and has lost interest because they can't get him to say anything.
Right.
New Loomis, which we keep calling him New Loomis, but Laurie actually goes, oh... You're the new Loomis.
Yeah,
she was not fucking impressed by him at all.
No, she shouldn't have been. And it was great. They brought to the forefront, without ever saying it, what a terrible Dr. Loomis was.
Yeah.
He's a fucking horrible doctor. There's pure evil in this boy. The fuck's wrong with you?
But Loomis is the only one that was like, I don't think you guys understand, and you need to get this fucking guy back.
Maybe if he wasn't such a cartoon about the way he expressed it, because he ended up with his own freak fucking follower.
Well, the thing is that like, every time he talks about Michael, when he met Laurie, you could see him get a boner. Dude. Like, the guy was like, just like, yes.
He was so fucking
you
weird.
Know? He was weird. He's and he had
Michael Myers kills people. Do you like my Loomis accent? I've worked on it in the mirror for 20 years.
Is. Yeah, and then you kind of get like about halfway through his arc, you're like, I don't believe that Loomis approved you to follow up his work at all.
Thank you. I was like, I think Loomis would be like, there's an evil in my student.
That's right. Well, I don't even think this guy was a student, really.
I
get the feeling this was a guy who was obsessed with this story and took it upon himself after Loomis's passing to... You know, carry on. And maybe he was a credible doctor at one point, but I think he fell down the rabbit hole and became crazy.
Well, in the same way that these journalists were fanboys.
Mm-hmm.
Really, were fanboys of a killer, when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And were fanboys of a crime story. This doctor was also a fanboy of a killer and the crime stories. And so there was this sort of strange message there underlying about, really? Like, what are you a fan of in this? The fact that this guy killed a bunch of fucking
people? But they
people?
Were,
like,
they were the kind
you?
Of journalists.
Well, he wanted to study his brain.
Always the motivation.
The most mad really scientist insane. Shit I ever heard. But no, the two journalists at the beginning, they, you know, they were the worst kind of journalists because they made it very clear, whatever we got to do, we want to bring these two people together to sort of document what happens because we think it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, interesting is the word. You know?
Yeah, I got your
so
head
this guy thing. Tried to murder you 40 years ago and it's ruined your life ever since. How do you feel about
Can
that?
You forgive him?
Because we really think he's not that bad of a person.
I think he's actually misunderstood.
Now that you
if
guys are here and we've got you together, now kiss.
Oh, God. Just one little kiss.
Just one
so
kiss.
There's a scene where they're in the bathroom and the shape, Michael Myers, finds them. And I don't think he's searching for them. I think he just runs across them.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows his mask is in the fucking trunk of their car. And he wants his mask back.
This is one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
But he goes up to the stall. The female journalist goes in to use the bathroom. And I like it because she walks and she's like, "Where's the loo?" And the guy is like, "Huh? What's a loo?" right. And what I like is she's in the bathroom and Michael Myers comes in and all you see is his feet, right? And he starts opening the stalls leading down the line. And by the second one, anyone is like, "Oh, that's not right."
But she did the same thing.
Yeah.
Those stalls were nasty.
True.
Yeah.
That's kind of gross. So by the third stall, she's kind of like, and then by the fourth, he goes to open it. She's like, "I'm in here." And then he just kind of like walks away. And then about 5 minutes later, he comes back and throws some teeth over the thing. Yeah. As if that buys an entrance. Like, yeah. That was what made me laugh.
I paid the toll.
Like, does this use some teeth?
Do these look familiar?
Well, what's disturbing about it is when he escapes, he's in the white jumpsuit. And that whole scene with the bus tipped over and all the inmates out, that was a callback to the first movie.
Yeah, I mean, it really was. Very much and it was fucked up.
Yeah, actually. It was. That was a very uncomfortable
very
scene.
I liked it.
Yeah.
But I died laughing when that 12-year-old boy shot new Loomis. And he goes,
shit.
And don't shoot. Boom.
We did laugh. Yeah. Because he was just like, oh shit. Oh, don't shoot me. Bam. You shot me.
Yeah. You know? No, so that scene, you see him in his white prison jumpsuit. And then the next time you see him, when he appears kicking the doors in, he's wearing the blue coveralls. And you're like, he wasn't wearing those a minute ago. That means some shit went down.
Right.
And he stripped it off of the mechanic there that was part of the gas station.
Yeah.
And yanked his teeth out of his head, apparently.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
No, that was the gas station attendant because his jaw was all extended.
Yeah,
like
ripped open. Yeah. Like a fucking animal.
There was some grisly. This is a much gorier movie than the first one. Directly gory, you know?
Absolutely.
But somehow still, compared to like Saw and a lot of the torture porn movies, still somehow more subtle.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but, you know, probably my favorite scene in the film, probably my favorite moment was the long shot where the kids run into Michael Myers and it's very much like the original. They're out trick-or-treating on Halloween
night. It felt just like the original
but
movie.
But what I like about it is the actor's movements, the way that his body moved, the way that the long shot just followed him in that he goes, walks down a driveway, picks up a hammer, walks into a house, bashes a woman's head open, starts to walk away. Oh, sees a knife, picks that up. This feels better.
This is me.
It's exactly like he's like, I just leveled up. And then he kind of sees a baby, looks at it, walks out, goes into the next house, stabs a woman to death, kind of walks away from there. And it really gives you this true feeling that this guy is just a fucking force of nature. Like he's just a killing machine. That's what he does.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to him. Mm-hmm. And he's so good at killing.
And so comfortable
and calm and methodical. Like, it's just like second nature, you know?
Well, there's like, it's him slipping back into the role. I said one of my favorite shots in the movie when you talked about it being at the gas station. So you see these kind of sporadic shots of him without his mask we talked about.
Right.
He's got a beard. He's bald. Those shots are kind of uncomfortable because you're
I love it.
You feel a little off. You're like, that's not Michael. that's not Michael. But the second he puts that mask on, personally, I felt a sense of relief. I felt like, see, now he can be himself. You know? I did. I was a little unsettled by the fact that there's like this.
And I agree. I love it.
But when he put that mask on, I was just like, now the movie is begun. He's here. And
going off of that, I think that they wanted us to have that. So he had his mask, he had his knife. But I like how they commented on it by having the people on the street who were getting their Halloween costumes together.
Yeah.
One of them said, "Oh wait, I have to go back and get my prop. You know,
yeah.
It's not complete without the prop." It was I think it was a doctor and a stethoscope.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just after Michael had gotten his knife, and we're seeing it like twirled in his hand, and they make that commentary on it.
Mr. Agitator is not Mr. Agitator without his hat. You know, the prop means everything.
It's true. No, it is. I mean, yeah, it's all about completing the idea, you know, and the way that you're perceived is a part of that idea. And I feel like it's the same thing for him and his mask, and he knows that. And it felt right. And it's that, you know, oh, I got to complete Michael Myers, whatever that idea is.
Yeah.
But what I loved was that he was just as much an unstoppable killing force with the mask off as he was with it on. And once again, selling home this idea that there's a guy under there, and he's not a cultist, he's not a Satan thing,
he's
not
killer.
A demon, he's a fucking
guy.
He's
a murderer.
He's just a guy.
And he's got his mind with him, too, because, and they didn't really show us this, but his mask was sitting in the trunk next to a milk crate full of files, and we already know that the criminal investigators, or whoever they were, the podcasters, that they had already gone to Jamie Lee Curtis's house.
Right.
So that's all in the files. The information, they knew where it was. And so they didn't show us that. But he must have read through those files when he grabbed his mask because he showed up at the house.
Right. He's like, yeah, I know where you live.
Yeah. Oh, look, everything I need right here. That's so convenient.
Hmm. Well, and it's kind of with him, you get the impression that they built him up to be as Nick put it, like force of nature. They built him up to be this boogeyman everywhere around town. But
and that's a line that gets brought up, and it's the famous line from the first film where, you know, Laurie Strode asks Dr. Loomis, based on the child she was babysitting that night, asking her, was that the boogeyman? And then Dr. Loomis's famous response is, I believe it was, you know. Implying that Michael Myers is the boogeyman, and his name originally, of course, was The Shape, and that's how he's credited. He's The Shape. He's this non-formed entity, right? This idea of evil on Halloween night, I guess. But, you know, 100%, yeah, you know, he's the boogeyman, and she knows it's real.
One thing that bothered me, though, and I only saw one instance where somebody seemed to notice. Everybody in this town talks about him, talks about that Halloween, talks about, you know, the houses in the neighborhood that were old and creepy. When he's walking around the neighborhood in that gear, you would think that somebody would have been like, that's not fucking funny in this town. You don't do
shit
here. And the only person that gave him the stink eye was the doctor who said he was going to get his stethoscope. He had his girlfriend was like dressed up like a slutty nurse. She looked at him and gave him a furrowed brow and kind of paused for a minute. But that's the only indicator that anybody, and maybe she was older than all the other kids in the shot, so maybe the kids just lost the legend over time. But maybe the adults would remember, but nobody thought to say, you know, I mean, like you would think in that town, it's like dressing up like a Nazi in Germany. You know what I mean? With what happened, because it's such a fixture of that town. People would be like, you can't do that here. Get out of here. But nobody said
that.
There
would be more of a negative connotation.
I thought so, too. I was kind of waiting for somebody to come up to you and say something and then get a knife in the forehead or something, you know?
Right.
So
I like that the kids trick-or-treating had the masks from the third Halloween movie.
Yes.
Oh, that was awesome.
Nice little touch.
But that's what Nick was talking about with all the like little callbacks. There's so many cool little things, you know?
My favorite callback, near the end, the final confrontation, when he and Laurie are kind of fighting and he stabs her and then pushes her out the window. And she falls and hits the ground, and we see his face, and he goes to look for her.
Well, his granddaughter distracts him for a second, and he looks behind him because he hears her talking and else, and he turns around, and there's that horrifying shot of, like, you know what it made me think of? Watchmen. I'm not locked in here with you. You're right. Locked in here with me.
Well, it's funny because he goes to look for her on the ground, just like the famous ending mm-hmm. of the original, where mm-hmm. he gets shot 2 or 3 times, falls on the ground, and then when she goes to look for him, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the film ending on the idea of, well, shit, the killer's out there,
mm-hmm.
you know. But what I like is he goes to look for her, and it even plays the same music cue as if underneath there he's like, oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie Strode's gone.
Yeah. Oh, I fucked up.
Like, it's way scarier to him.
I like it too because it was a little bit reminiscent of the way that she dies in the original timeline.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. So they have Halloween, right? And then they did H2O, Halloween 20 years later. Now, I've seen people online say that they feel like Halloween H2O was a far better film than this. I don't know how.
No.
Yeah. I mean, that's
that,
your
that movie
that's
was
okay.
not well
not
reviewed
sure.
when it came out. It was not a particularly well liked movie.
And I remember watching it and being kind of like, "Oh, well, that's stupid." Mm-hmm. You know.
Let's talk about Laurie's house and kind of the ending of that movie a little sure. bit too. I thought for certain when he grabbed her through the door that she was goosed. I thought that was it. And then her,
yeah.
her daughter was going to have to save the day.
Yeah.
I thought that that scene with her daughter was really cool, where that like lifelong drilling, the training of being prepared into her did kick in and she did protect
yep.
her daughter. I thought that was really cool. And mm-hmm. there is kind of an implication that if there is a sequel to this, that, you know, it's a lot of it's going to center around that more of that relationship maybe.
And I think it could.
And the granddaughter as well. I thought you know, there's a lot to work with there if they go forward. But let's talk about the badassery of her blowing his fingers off with a shotgun.
Oh, yeah.
Which was just uncomfortable. And one of the few moments in the movie where he makes a sound.
Right.
He actually grunted. It's the closest you hear to him making noise. And then I thought it was amazing that you kind of slowly watch her unfold her house into mm-hmm. literally a trap. When she
right.
goes, she clears a room, makes sure she's not in there, and then cages it shut so he can't get in and he has nowhere to move around the house and hide. Goes to the second room, checks everything in it, comes
yep.
out, cages it shut. One way or another, she made every room in that house a cage to trap him.
I was a little bit surprised then that he got to her so easily through the glass on the front door.
True.
Did she overlook the glass on the front door?
True.
I mean,
yeah,
that is a good point.
Yeah.
Or maybe she didn't think his hands would get through the door or the glass. Like, I don't know, whatever contingency.
You know what? We have glass. That's all we need.
No, I don't know. I was really kind of sad to see, you know, her daughter's husband die. He was a funny character. But all I could think of
okay.
is from Seinfeld. I'm the Wiz.
He was in the field. And
he was the Wiz.
He was a worthless fucking turd.
No, I was sad
Every
to see him die because he was funny.
Every guy in this movie was a worthless piece of shit.
Yeah, they were.
You know, you have Lori's granddaughter's boyfriend who in the middle of a Halloween party is like kissing on some girl while he's there with her.
Yeah.
There is
and then
no lead up to
really
this.
Meanly throws her phone into like pudding.
And I love it. She calls him out on it like you would. Because she's standing there and she looks over and he's like kissing on some girl.
Uh-huh.
And she's like,
she
oh
was
my
whispering
God.
Into my ear, man.
Right. And he comes out and he's just like, why are you mad? It's like, what do you mean, why is she mad? So the whole time he's standing there, she's like, you were kissing some girl and I can't. And he's just like, no, I wasn't. I didn't do that. She's like, I just saw
she
you
came
do
up
it.
And she was like whispering in my ear, man. Like, I don't know what you thought you saw, but.
I know what I saw. Then he takes her phone away from her and throws it in some pudding. She's
Cause,
like,
because I know that at the Halloween dance in high school, they serve huge bowls of pudding.
Pudding.
Yeah.
It should have been punch or something.
Yeah.
So he throws her phone away, which, hey, good for you, script guys, as a way to get her fucking phone away from her.
But that was
help.
A MacGuffin, though.
But
because
it is a
what
MacGuffin.
Ends up happening at this point is they send the police to go get her because she's wandering around and they can't reach her by phone.
Right.
They pick her up and she ends up with. You know, poor man's Loomis, who it was
surprise.
In one of the strangest, weirdest, funniest scenes in that movie when he just suddenly stabs a cop in the neck and then stands up looking like Danny DeVito wearing
Michael Myers mask.
I was cackling.
So immediately I was like, wait a second. this might actually be brilliant. Were they trying to say that the therapist was actually Michael Myers the whole time?
I thought
that he swapped with another patient. I was like, and that would mean Michael Myers has just been talking to us the whole time.
Somehow he's gotten older. And he's been
pretending to be a fucking...
Look, that would have worked had they not cast somebody that's 5'2".
I thought maybe they were going to go the route of trying to blend Halloween 3 in by saying the mask is the evil thing that controls people, so whoever's wearing this mask is going to be the evil killer. But it didn't happen, though. I mean, a little bit.
And let me tell you something.
A little bit.
Michael Myers, that hulking man, I don't for one second believe that Danny DeVito-looking dude could have picked Michael Myers up and put him in that fucking truck.
No, true.
And he grunts minimally. I listened for it. He was like, yeah. And I was like, that's not, you can't lift him.
My Loomis powers make this possible.
That's right. I'm so erect right now that I'm just.
I just lifted him with my erection.
I've moved him with sexual rage.
It's true.
Very uncomfortable.
My bad psychologist powers allow me to do anything.
Kept waiting for him to turn into Palpatine.
Yeah, he felt like it. He was there was some shit.
Weird character.
Yeah.
Weird character. I get why they did it, because you got to have a Loomis, I guess.
We didn't really need him.
Well,
It makes sense that he released Michael Myers in the beginning. Like, he's the reason.
But he was concerned. He said, did he escape? Did he escape? When he came back, too.
Yeah.
No, because he was afraid harm would come to him. Where
did he escape? It worked.
And that's what they were trying to set him up to seem like a concerned party, like stupid. Loomis was, where Loomis was concerned about other people getting hurt. And slowly they unfold with this guy that his concern is like almost, it's almost love. It's like parental.
Where's my test subject?
Yeah. It is love. Where's my son?
Yeah. Where's my psycho? Where's my psycho?
And then I wonder how the bus crashed.
Yeah.
I would have liked that bit of information.
You know, at first when Lori showed up to dinner in the following scene after the bus had crashed and she was just like, I'm upset, I know something bad's happening. I thought she broke him out on purpose. I thought that she caused the bus crash so that she could hunt Michael Myers down herself. But it didn't go there.
Well, that wouldn't have been too far-fetched. I mean, if they had done it that way. I bet you if you watched this a second time, look for a neck injury on the bus driver. I bet you fake Loomis stabbed him with the same thing he stabbed the cop.
Yeah, I can see
that. No, because he said, so this is what it feels like after he killed Frank. Which, by the way, for a character that was in the original movie, that was a really kind of cheap way to take that character out. So.
And it was also like, what? You just now decided you were going to do this? Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah. Well, because he thought that he killed Michael and that he was going to kill. Because he said, I don't give a shit if he's already dead. I'm going to blow his fucking brains out on the street.
The Strode ladies do survive. Michael is trapped in the house. They light it on fire, and they burn the shape. Although, we don't see him get burned.
No, they actually leave that part pretty ambiguous. Open. You know what I mean? Like, they imply that he's in a cage, and there's really no fucking way he's going to get out.
I assume he's fireproof.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling that the gas station overalls he selected are probably not flame retardant.
Yeah, probably not. I think he's a crispy Michael Myers.
Maybe, but are they going to do the Jason thing where they bring him back all burnt? I don't want them to go that route.
So then maybe what'll happen is in 20 years from now, they'll reboot this one and go back to the first one again and be like, everything that happened where he was on fire didn't happen. You know?
Maybe they can. I don't know. This movie made a lot of money over the weekend. Yeah, it did. Like it
an astronomical amount for a horror film.
And a slasher film and an R-rated movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of, to me, the first movie of this style that's done what I think they wanted it to do money-wise and business-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which is good.
Since 2008's Rob Zombie Halloween.
It bodes well for the slasher. This movie could kickstart a whole resurgence because I'm of the opinion they really need to go back and do another decent Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Yeah.
Because I love Jackie Earle Haley. That was not the right vehicle for him.
Yeah, he was great. And it's
the movie
sad.
Was not.
Yeah, that's what it ended up being. But, I feel like it is kind of weird how it's becoming this thing where it's like, well, every 10 years, just reboot Halloween and it'll just print a lot of money for you.
Yeah,
I can't wait until they remake the third one.
Oh my God. Yes.
I bet it could be pretty good.
Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I love it.
It's all about Stonehenge. It's such an insane movie. But I love it. It's got androids, Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. That movie's nuts.
How high do you have to be? to write Halloween 3.
I mean, apparently not too high, because it's out there. It happened.
Yeah, it did.
All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this one up.
You didn't say how many, you know, fancy Butterfinger knives you have.
You want my review?
Yeah, or how many top hats or...
Tell me.
What's up? I was going to say, can you also touch on the pumpkin stomping of the person's head?
Oh, yes!
Fake Loomis.
We can't end the show without talking about that.
That was great.
So, Fake Loomis, right... Michael Myers' second doctor, he's a douchebag, as we've found out. He's laying on the ground after Michael regains consciousness, kicks through... Michael is in the back of a police car, sitting next to Laurie Strode's granddaughter. And she's screaming, "Oh my God, it's Michael Myers!" and shit. And he kicks through the back of the cop car, where Dr. is sitting at the driver's wheel.
What his name is.
What's his name? Do you know what his name is? I don't know what his name is. It's Dr.
Dr. Sartain.
Dr. Sardines. So Dr. Sardine is sitting at the driver's seat behind the wheel, and then Michael kicks from the back through the bars, and he's like, "Oh no," and he knocks him out, and then Michael gets out, drags his ass, I think, out into the street. And he just starts, like, stabbing him, if I'm correct, right? Or he's, like, hitting him or something.
I don't remember what
it was. He's attacking him.
There's a lot of things all at once.
Look, none of that matters. All that matters is he steps on his head.
It's like he's pushing all the buttons on
him. He's, like, punching him with one hand, stabbing him with the other, and, like, kneeing him and spitting on him. He's doing all this shit to him, which is fair, because that dude was a douche. And he's like, Michael, please say something. Say something. And Michael just looks down at him and he's just staring at him and he's like, "Say something." And then he just like steps on his head.
Yeah.
And it like explodes.
Yeah. He squished it. Squished it like a soft melon.
It was pretty great.
Make it nice and meatloaf.
Like you couldn't have given him anything. You're about to kill a guy. And he's like, "Just speak to me, my love." But he's just like, no. You could have at least looked down at him and like lifted the mask and been like, "Fuzzy. Make them kiss."
another throwback yeah. was you know, her blonde friend Vicky, the one that was babysitting the younger
who was
kid.
Super cute, by the way.
Yeah.
Liked that actress. She
did the job really well.
She was really good. Liked her.
And the kid that was playing opposite her, he was great.
Yeah, like
was some
hilarious.
Of the best exchanges funny. In that movie were that scene.
Yeah. Well, because it's like I enjoy that when they write a scene in that way where they kind of call to the forefront what the audience would probably be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like it makes it feel more natural, you know. Like he's like, you know, "I'm gonna be sitting here clipping my fucking toenails if you know,
yeah.
we're good at babysitting."
They give each other shit, and then ultimately right. they're really sweet to each other.
Yeah,
and it's funny.
Very sweet.
She's when her boyfriend comes over,
you are my favorite kid to babysit or some shit.
When her boyfriend comes over, that's a callback to the first movie too. When they find him pinned to the wall,
mm-hmm. yeah,
just like that's the great. You know blonde guy in the original movie, you know, that he sticks to the wall and then stands there and stares at him for a minute. That scene was pretty cool from the original.
And every guy in this movie is a dumb fucking douchebag.
Yep,
which is so funny. Like, they're all kind of just burnouts, and they kind of just stare at shit, and they don't do anything. Like, he hears her upstairs screaming, and he's just like,
No, he runs and grabs a knife. He's, "Fuck this," and he goes and grabs a knife.
After
and
then, she's clearly
and the kid's
dead.
Like,
yeah, and then next
like,
time
you go up there, you're going to die. And
he tells
thinks
him.
About it for a second.
Yeah.
Do I like her that much?
Shouldn't have grabbed the knife, because next time you see him with that knife, it's,
right,
it's pinning him to a wall.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I your rating?
My rating of it. Honestly, I would give Halloween 2018. Fuck it, 4 out of 4.
Yeah, you loved it, huh? But that's the thing.
4 out of 4. What?
4 out of 4 top hats.
Top hats. Yes.
4 out of 4 flame retardant jumpsuits.
Yes.
You're so good at saying those words.
I am.
I always have so much trouble.
It's because I don't have the fear. I don't have the fear.
You don't feel fear. By the way, let's do another kill callback to an episode, the very first episode, Terrifier.
Yep.
Did you notice the carved pumpkin jack-o'-lantern head?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And was that not right out of fucking Terrifier?
Was it the same one?
Dude, it was the exact same kill.
With the swirly eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember in Terrifier
Holy shit.
When he cut the jack-o'-lantern head out of the person? Yeah, that was the exact
when
same kill.
He was sitting
kill.
In the cop's lap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
like
completely
identical.
Forgot about that.
Even, it was even lit like a jack-o'-lantern head.
Yeah, meanwhile, the director of Terrifier is like, oh, come on!
He said, you fucking stole my kill.
Yeah. No.
Oh, well.
You know, that was another thing. Speaking of callbacks, I liked the title sequence, the opening title sequence
amazing.
Of the movie. Because it was like, it was straight out of the original
amazing.
Movie. And it was the pumpkin, instead of
coming
instead
back
of zooming
to
back,
life.
It was coming back to life. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I loved it. It was coming back to life, and it even had the cute little cut on the nose. Because, you know, that was an actual mistake. That was made while they were carving the pumpkin to film it.
Cute.
She slipped and actually cut the nose in half, like a little divot out of the nose. And I love that they kept it.
Yep.
And in That's the cool. second film, they had the little Halloween pumpkin opening, but it was like garish and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, you would zoom in on the pumpkin in the second film and like opened and there was a skull inside of it. It's like, what was this for? So I like this. It was simple. It was sweet. It was good. I give Halloween 4 out of 4 top hats. And I do this because it was a good throwback. I found myself enjoying and believing in the characters and their interactions. And I also really think that it was incredible that they brought to the forefront how a final girl would probably live for the rest of her life. You know, that 15 minutes of a horrible event in your life can shape who you are, who your kid is, and who their kid is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's such a powerful message. You know, to us, the girl gets chased and she either gets away or she doesn't. And this is a film about what happens when you actually escape and survive. And then you have the unfortunate task of living with it.
Yeah, because there's no happy ending after that.
No.
It's just a life full of strife and stress and anxiety.
Yeah.
Though I would love to know where she's getting this kind of income being agoraphobic. That she can make her entire house out in the woods.
True. She did imply that she's done more than one interview. And they paid her $3,000 for 6 minutes of her time.
I guess
so,
that's true. That's a good point.
You don't know, man. She was probably smart enough to capitalize on
true.
That.
True. Mm-hmm. No? I could see that being a thing. Yeah. But you're right, though, in that they didn't really address what she does.
Well, they kind of implied that...
In H2O, she was a teacher. I know that's a rejected timeline now, but she was like in California, and she was teaching. And, you know, Michael Myers was surfing in his off time.
It's disturbing. It's a very disturbing image.
Surfing waves of blood.
Yes, no. He was.
It was fun. The best thing they could have done was stay true to the original, because that was the idea about rejecting everything that came after. Trying to make sure that the characters were well represented. And I got to give Jamie Lee Curtis credit. She did a great job.
Yeah, she was fantastic.
She played firmly in charge of her space, like very kind of aggressive, crazy person that was so composed until you put her somewhere she wasn't comfortable.
And you felt
which was anywhere but her house because her house was prepared.
That was safe zone, right?
Anything
right,
outside, right. you're fair game. So she was like the few scenes you see her in public, she's really unhinged and kind of nervous and fidgety and talks really fast and kind of uncomposed.
Yep.
Total opposite in her house, like master of her domain while she was there. Very good job. She did a great job.
I enjoyed her more in this movie than I think in any other movie I've seen her in.
Yeah, so. She was really great.
I agree.
Strongly written character. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up. I feel like we could probably go on for another 10 hours.
You're probably good. There's a lot to talk about.
There was a lot to unpack, and there was a lot about the film that was amazing. And there was a lot that was kind of hokey and bad and kind of funny.
But in the same way that the original one was.
But it worked, right?
Yeah, because it felt
I was entertained from the moment the film started to the moment that it ended.
It was fun.
Agreed. If I stay awake in a theater, that's saying something.
It was perfect Halloween fun.
You hear it. That's going to be on the back of the DVD. If I stay awake in the theater, that says something. Yes. Kizzy Chaos.
Worst rock stars ever.
All right. Well, we're V is for Villains. We had a lot of fun talking to you guys tonight.
Yeah, we did. You guys might want to stay tuned as we're kind of winding out more information about the record. We did a bit of that big announcement.
Yeah, we
last
did.
Last week. You know, in the Terrifier episode, we kind of teased that, you know, a new album was coming and that there were some things to be excited about. You guys ended up naming the record.
You know,
it's going to be called Villains Never Die.
Villains Never Die.
Which,
July 5th, 2019.
There's a track on the record called Villains Never Die. Not
That's
only
true.
Did you guys name the record, it's the title track.
That's true.
There's on the record. You guys name it. There's going to be a lot more to talk about. We were kind of previewing and showing some of the music tonight, and you know, it's coming along. There's a lot to talk about. So keep your eyes and ears out for that. It's on the way. More info. And check out the remixes that Nick put out for Nightmare on Elm Street and Halloween, he did some really awesome Vs for Villains themed remixes. So
it's been fun.
Those are up on the YouTube channel.
They're out there, man. I'm Mr. Agitator, lead singer-songwriter.
I'm Fallon Flynn. I play guitar and do backup vocals.
Kizzy Chaos, synth and backup vocals.
And you've been listening to V is for Villains podcast episode 2, Halloween 2018.